Now Bethany was nigh unto Jerusalem, about 15 furlongs off. So we're being told that a couple of miles away is Jerusalem, that this is the path to Jerusalem. You could walk it in about an hour and a half. But spiritually, until you have reached Bethany, where human will is sacrificed to accept divine will totally, you can't move to the higher realm. Unless divine will activates your day, your experience, that is the level at which you will remain in duality, alternating between the good and the evil of the world. But when you have passed to the point where divine will itself is all that you respond to, when you have built the inner ear of response to the will of the Father, when you have accepted yourself as the immortal self, the spirit, the living child of God, then divine will activates you and moves you up into Jerusalem, 2 furlongs or 15 furlongs away, and these 15 would represent successive states of development that will come after Bethany. New progressions in consciousness, made possible only when divine will is the motivating force of your being. Many of the Jews came in to Martha and Mary to comfort them concerning their brother. Now, if this were an outer experience, you can be sure that all of the activity that had followed and many people from the countryside who had gathered would have made it impossible to leave this out of the earlier Gospels. And so we're going to have to see that the Jews who come to comfort are the human thoughts. These human thoughts are not the real comforter. The real comforter is Christ. The human thoughts, the sympathy, the affection expressed, and in this case, the false sense of sympathy, the false sense of affection, because many of these who came are the same ones who wanted to stone the Master, stoning him by turning away even bitter toward Christ. And so you can't express love to this one and bitterness to the Christ. You can see the hypocrisy expressed here. And so we're seeing this as the Jews, the thoughts of a person, the thoughts of the human intellect, try to comfort us, our brother is dying. What good does it do? That doesn't change anything. It just perpetuates the illusion of the death, so that others may go through the same illusion. It obliterates the whole meaning of resurrection. All the flowers and sympathy would represent the Jew, the intellect in us saying to us, don't be so feeling so bad about this. All on the mental level, the human level, not seeing the reality that is happening, not knowing that Mary and Martha are going through a learning period. And so while Mary and Martha, seen by John on the inner plane, are entertaining thoughts of comfort about their condition, Martha, as soon as she heard Jesus was coming, went out and met him. It doesn't say out, I put that in. Was coming, went and met him. But Mary sat still in the house. And the reason that I said out is because it's on my mind. Mary did remain in the house. And again the word, sat still in the house. Martha ran out. The mind goes out to meet the Christ as a person. But the heart remains within to meet the Christ within the heart. And you're going to see now the beautiful way in which John has traced this for us, how the outer and the inner become one. Then said Martha unto Jesus, Lord, if thou hadst been here, my brother had not died. The mind sees a man. It says, if you, man, if you, Jesus, had been here, my brother wouldn't have died. She's remonstrating. She's saying, in a sense, what took you so long? The mind is personalizing the Christ, but doesn't know it. And, of course, Christ must show the error of the mind. So she says now, but I know that even now, whatsoever thou wilt ask of God, God will give it thee. She's still saying the personal power of the man, that he can do something, intercede for Lazarus in some way. But you know, personally, he cannot. No human being has any power. Jesus says to her, thy brother shall rise again. He doesn't tell her, you're personalizing. You think I'm a man and that I'm going to do something to help your brother. He doesn't explain to her that his physical presence is not going to do anything, or else he'd have been there long ago. He remained physically unpresent, absent, because it's the Spirit which quickens. And the Spirit is ever present, whether Jesus is physically present or not, and she knows this not, that his physical presence has nothing to do with the ever presence of the Spirit, that the Christ of Jesus was ever present, though they knew it not. The Christ never left Lazarus, never left Martha, never left Mary, was ever present during the complete activity. But Martha is unaware of this. Rather than explain it, he says, your brother will rise again. How could he be sure? Well, that's what those 2 days were about. Resting in the one Spirit, the one self, until the quickening, the awareness of the presence says, I am the one. Beside me there is no other. And in that assurance, in that inner awareness of the self, there is no death, there is only life expressed. When he says, thy brother will rise again, he's telling her about a fact that already has been established. A fact that could never be otherwise. He's telling her that the life of an individual is always present and does not depend upon the appearance of a form. Your life does not depend upon the condition of your form. You will rise again. Why? Nothing can happen to your life. That's why. The real life is always present. The false life cannot maintain the form. The false form and the false life go hand in hand. And the counterfeit nature of the false life is here revealed, because there is a life that is not counterfeit, and it is present, and it does rise. That rising is not actually a rising. It's the permanent status of that life. It only seems to rise when the false sense disappears. The rising of that life which was ever there is simply the recognition of its presence. The real life, ever present, activates the real body which is ever present. And now we are losing the sense of a counterfeit form and a counterfeit life, as the Spirit draws near in the form of Christ Jesus. thy brother will rise again. You're going to see that life is the name of your brother, that he's always a living soul, that mankind is always invisible life. It doesn't die. It simply tries to live in a form that isn't, and a counterfeit mind cannot maintain a counterfeit form, and it goes through the ins and outs of a counterfeit life, completely oblivious to the real life that is present, which is to be revealed here in a moment. Thy brother will rise again. And of course, you can't understand him. Martha saith unto him, well, I know that he will rise again in the resurrection of the last day. Now, she has said something very important. In the resurrection of the last day. If anyone had thought, for example, that the last day meant when you die, you can see that it doesn't mean that at all, because if it meant the last day when you die, then she wouldn't have said he will rise in the resurrection of the last day, because to her sense, he's already dead. The last day has already happened. So how can she say he will rise in the last day? The last day has happened. So last day here doesn't mean when Lazarus dies, because he's already dead. It means the end of the world. There will be resurrection in the last day. There will be resurrection at the end of the world. That happens to be a prevailing belief in the world today. And Martha's belief then was wrong and is wrong today. She thought there would be a resurrection in the end of the world, that the world would end and we would all rise into something else, which is so wrong. There wasn't going to be a resurrection at the end of the world. There's going to be a resurrection before the end of the world. There's going to be a resurrection in each individual who comes to Christ. And if we await the resurrection after the end of the world, we simply follow in the path of ignorance which the world has followed up to now, turning away from the message of resurrection while in the flesh. Not on the last day, but in the day before it is night. Now, the very thing we're going through. Jesus said unto her, I am the resurrection and the life. He that believeth in me, though he were dead, yet shall he live. And whosoever liveth and believeth in me shall never die. Believe thou this? Well, it wouldn't really matter what she answered. She could try to believe it because he said it. Martha, the human mind at this point, had no capacity to understand this. I am the resurrection. Think of I in the midst of you, and know that I in the midst of you am the resurrection. I in the midst of you am the life. If you believe on I in the midst of you, though you were dead, yet shall you live. That's precisely what Lazarus was going through. He was realizing I in the midst of him, as shown by Jesus drawing near now to the tomb. He was becoming conscious of I in the midst of him as the resurrection. And if he could speak, he would say, as Jesus drew near to the city of Bethany, as my sister walked out to greet him, I was feeling the presence of I in the midst of me, already beginning to lift me out of the tomb of false belief, out of the tomb of the belief that I had been mortal, into the knowledge that I in the midst of me is the Spirit of God, the resurrection from all false belief, into the reality of walking here now in my Father's kingdom. I in the midst of me, mighty, active, living, opening my eyes to myself. As the Christ reveals, I am the resurrection, you are hearing the inner self say to you, I in the midst of you. I take you through the tomb of mortality. I release the stone that bars the entrance into immortality. I reveal to you my Father's kingdom on earth. I am your only life. The life you had lived in mortal selfhood is not your life. It was the counterfeit. And don't wait for the last day to discover it. Don't wait till the end of a world. Resurrection is now. I am the resurrection, not I will be. Resurrection is this very day. We learn the nowness of resurrection is turning to I in the midst of me, the very self which is the child of God, abiding there. Two more days until the self is established in consciousness as my reality, till I turn from the mortal sense of self, until Lazarus within me is Christed, until I am the resurrection itself, until I am the life itself, until my secret is that I am no longer under the belief that I am a mortal being. I leave the tomb of mortality. I walk out of the grave. Right here on the earth, clothed in a new consciousness. And this is the overcoming of death. Whoever goes through this experience, though he were dead, he shall live. In this overcoming of death, there is no death to go through again. The illusion is shattered. The death is within. We cannot overlook this resurrection of Lazarus for this reason. It is the passport to immortality. It is the very crucial moment in the complete teaching of Christ. Without it, there'd be no going into Jerusalem. There'd be no Holy Easter week. There'd be no Palm Sunday. There'd be no rising. There'd be no ascension. There'd be no heaven on earth. With it, there is life without end. And if that is not true, the Bible has no meaning. With it, there is life without end. He has spoken. If you believe on me, though you were dead, yet shall you live. Death has no meaning once I, Christ within, is accepted as the resurrection, a living experience. Not a dead man being raised out of a grave, but one who is asleep to Christ, awakening to Christ. One who is dead to Christ, becoming alive in Christ. This is the crucifixion of mortality and its component, the resurrection into spiritual self. I in the midst of you is the only place you're going to discover life. And then be still and know that I am God. God in you is the resurrection. God in you is the life. God is not mortal. God is not flesh and blood. God is not living a limited lifespan. Be still and know that I am God. I am the resurrection. I am the life. I can never leave you. I can never forsake you. I am the way. I stand at the door. Open your consciousness to this I in the midst. For I am the resurrection, which you see here as Lazarus. And then Lazarus in you will come forth, reborn of the Spirit. Then Lazarus in the Bible will have a meaning, a living meaning. In every consciousness that accepts the words that are expressed by the Spirit in this particular rendition of John. Some of you may even think right now that you're further into the resurrection experience than you ever dreamed. I think some of you are. You may find that at times you're floating, you're not walking. You're almost aware of the fact that there's a different you here. You may feel a sense of a strangeness in power, an awareness that in some way or other every need is met quickly, without writing a letter to someone far away, that Christ is present. I am present. I can never leave you. What are you writing a letter to me for? I am present where you are. And so Martha in you is learning to turn within to Mary. That head must come into heart. Faith must be so activated that it turns within to the heart and moves the heart into an activity. That not only faith, but faith must activate the will. It isn't enough to say, I believe. The faith must turn into an active commitment. A living faith. This activates the love. And the love will then rush forth and embrace the Christ and release the divine will. We're going to pause a bit. You watch how beautifully John has given us the inner codes that we may move through this experience with knowledge, sure-footed, not groping. Let's just pause in silence a moment. When Christ says to Martha, "Believest thou this?" That is Christ saying to our mind, "Do you believe this?" Martha represents the human mind. And when we can answer as Martha did, it won't be any different than her. She didn't answer with a total conviction. You just don't suddenly change and say, "Oh yes, of course, of course." But she opened herself up to accept, and this was the activization of her faith. She didn't fully comprehend, she didn't have the conviction yet, but there was enough understanding to go and do something about it. And so she saith unto him, "Yea, Lord, I believe thou art the Christ, the Son of God, which should come into the world. And when she had so said, she went away and called Mary, her sister, secretly, saying, The Master is come and calleth for thee. And then mind turns over to heart. The faith now proceeds to the will. Yeah, out here I've said, I believe, but now I move into that will and say, now, because I believe, let us do so and so. So Mary comes out. You release your will through your faith. And if your faith isn't strong enough to release your will, then your faith isn't a living faith. And by releasing the will, we mean, this that I believe has reached the depth of consciousness in which I will now do something about what I believe. I might have to change a few things in the outer, in my plans, in my schedule, but I'm going to do something, because now the will of me is going to back up the faith of me. So Martha goes into Mary. You see that code that follows? And now Mary comes out. The will becomes active through faith. And you've met many people who haven't reached that stage. They know all the words, but the will is not following their faith. Mary hasn't come out, because Martha is still running around outside. Called Mary, her sister, secretly, meaning within, saying, The Master is come and calleth for thee. Now Christ calls those by name whom Christ knows love Christ. You feel the call when there's a love of truth within you. You feel the call of the Christ. Until there is a love of truth within you, you don't feel the call of the Christ. And the Christ cannot call you by name. Only those who love Christ are called by name. Only those who love the child of God within themselves sufficiently to accept are called by name. As soon as she heard that Christ called her, meaning loving Christ supremely, she had opened to the Christ which could say within, I am come. Outside it was Martha saying to her, but inside it was Christ saying, I am come. Called by name, she heard the voice. As soon as she heard that, she arose quickly and came unto him. Arose means spiritually. And quickly, obviously, is quickened. As soon as I, the voice, spoke within her, she was quickened, risen in consciousness. The outer faith, turning to the inner love, quickens that love into an acceptance of the divine will. And the moment the divine will is quickened in us, we are in the house of the Father. And now everything human is dying and everything divine is being born. Mary rushes out now to greet him. And so physically there's a Mary and there's a Jesus meeting out there. Now Jesus was not yet come into the town, but was in that place where Martha met him. The Jews then, which were with her in that house, incidentally, the place that he was in, where Martha met him, is outside of the commotion in the house, outside of the world thought. The Christ never enters into the world thought. We have to leave our consciousness where we are to go to the Christ. We have to leave world thought and go out of world thought. And Mary now leaves world thought. The Jews then, which were with her in the house, again house, sometimes it means the consciousness of truth, sometimes it means world thought. Continued, comforting her, and when they saw Mary, that she rose up hastily and went out, followed her, saying, "She goeth unto the grave to weep there." Now up to a point, Mary is led by the mind too. But now that she has found the Christ within, the mind follows her. She isn't led by the mind. As she goes out to the grave, the Jews says, "Let us follow her," because she is weeping and going to the grave. Mind now follows he who is led by the Spirit. Whereas before, mind leads us. Now mind follows us. Soul is taking precedence over mind. Then when Mary was come where Jesus was, she saw him. She fell down at his feet, saying unto him, "Lord, if thou hadst been here, my brother had not died." Martha said that too. You notice the progression? Martha said it as if to say, "Why hadn't you come sooner?" Mary said the very same words, but she threw herself at his feet. Now, she was at a higher level. She was accepting the physical Jesus as a power. But she was accepting him so completely that she was surrendering. And still, not in the high consciousness, for she still said, "If you had been here, he would have not died. He would not have died." And this is to show us that the absence of I in consciousness is still that which is missing at this point. Until I, the Christ, enter the consciousness of Mary and Martha completely, until they are wedded as one, there is still a separation of believing that if I had been there, he would not have died. Until the realization is, it is not a question if I had been there, the realization must come that I am present. I have never left. I can never leave you. Don't wait for me to come. I am present. She hadn't reached that knowledge, even though she knew the Christ, she didn't know the fullness of the Christ yet. The fullness of the Christ is the acceptance that I, the Christ, is my own self. All of these separate parts are coming now into a one self, so that I, Christ Jesus, I, Martha, I, Mary, I, Lazarus, will become one I, Christ, in us. No waiting, no separation, no space, no time. Now, I, Christ, am here as yourself. Yourself is the resurrection. Yourself accepted. When Jesus therefore saw her weeping, and the Jews also weeping, which came with her, he groaned in the spirit and was troubled. The awareness of the distance they still had to travel in consciousness is the groaning. They hadn't learned that his name was Christ. They didn't know he was the activity of God on earth. They still saw him personalized as a man with personal powers. If he had been there, their brother, they didn't understand yet, and that's the groaning. And they were higher than the Jews which followed her. The great gap between the human consciousness and the realization of its own true immortal selfhood is the groaning of spirit. and said, "Where have ye laid him?" Now you would think he's talking about where did they lay Lazarus, the physical form. But it's like, pick up thy bed and walk. How are you beholding him in your consciousness? Where have ye laid him? What is your belief? Did you bury him in your consciousness as a mortal being? Are you seeing him as he is? Where have you laid him? What is the level of your consciousness? Where have you laid yourself? What do you believe about you? Wherever your belief is about you, that's where you have laid yourself. Where have you laid him? You may have laid yourself in the tomb of mortality without realizing it. That's the implication. And they said to him, "Lord, come and see." That's the invitation to Christ that all of us must come to. "Lord, come and see" is the invitation. We will look through your eyes. You show us what we should do. She who had surrendered at his feet is now opening to letting that Christ direct her, show her, be her inner eye. "Lord, come and see where we have laid him. You show us the proper place." The invitation to Christ in your own being. Now Jesus wept. And we should clarify this within ourselves, that wherever a person weeps, we know what that is. When spirit weeps, that is because divine love has not been accepted by immortality. These are infinite tears, purifying with love. These are precious tears. They are telling us that whenever divine love is unaccepted, spirit is weeping. Spirit is saying, the same as it did at the well, "Give me to drink." Christ says, "Give me to drink." Meaning, Christ in you is thirsty for your recognition. Spirit weeps because spirit is thirsty for your recognition. It's the very same expression. The weeping of spirit, the weeping of Jesus, is the weeping of Christ in you saying, "You've turned away from me. My love is yours and you won't accept it. Why?" These are the tears that are wept within each of us by our own identity, which we are not recognizing. And of course, the human seeing and weep, the human thoughts will say, "Oh, how he loved him." But Jesus is not weeping for Lazarus. Christ is weeping for mankind's recognition. Some of them even said, "Could not this man which opened the eyes of the blind have caused that even this man should have not have died?" And therefore again Jesus, groaning in himself, cometh to the grave. They wanted to know why, if he could save the blind, he hadn't saved this man from dying. And we must understand that he didn't want to prevent the physical death of Lazarus. What spirit was going to do was not prevent the death, but restore the life. Preventing the death would be nothing. To reveal the presence of immortal life was the purpose here. And looking out of a material consciousness, we would not know that. Spirit in you is to restore you to immortal life, not to prevent your physical death, but to show you the way to life. not to prolong your physical years, a year or two or ten, but to remove the illusion of death completely by bringing us into life before the experience of death. The glorious passport to immortality is awaiting all who hear the weeping of the Christ. We dry those tears by coming to the Christ, accepting the divine love. Now he comes to the grave. It's a cave. It has a stone over it. A grave, cave, a stone. The grave is the mind. The cave is our obscurity to the truth of the word. The stone is the appearances that we now put over the cave with our limited knowledge of the letter, so that we've got ourselves totally barricaded out of truth. We bury ourselves in the mind, and it buries us in a body, in a cave. And there we do not know the truth of our own being, and we cover that cave with a stone, the false appearances of the mind, the concepts, the false knowledge that we accept as reality, the false appearances, even quoting the letter of truth and barring ourselves completely from the truth by the false letter of the truth. And he says, remove the stone. Take ye away the stone, Martha. You notice he says it to Martha, the mind. To your mind he says, remove the stone. Remove your beliefs that you know so much in your mind. Remove your efforts through your mind. Remove your concepts. Become as Lazarus did, purify, free of concept, free of belief, free of any mental activity other than opening through faith, going in to the heart, to the love, to activate that love through faith, to believe, to commit yourself on trust that the love of the Father in you is all you need know. And lo and behold, that will remove the stone. Active love, trusting love, divine love, to be present in yourself as a living reality. Believing it, knowing it, living it. Roll away the stone. Martha, of course, out of material consciousness, cannot understand. The mind says, but Lord, by this time he stinketh, for he hath been dead 4 days. She still is thinking of a corrupt body. But Christ knows no body to decay. Christ brushes right past that statement. There is no body in there. There is no body out there. There is no mortal decay. That's material consciousness, which is not in the acceptance of self. Said I not unto thee that if thou wouldst believe, thou shouldst see the glory of God? To believe what? To believe Christ within you is present now. A until we believe Christ within me is present now as myself. We're not in the Lazarus consciousness which is ready to be Christed. And when we believe, then they took away the stone from that place where the dead was laid. That's the belief. Active belief is taking away that stone. Christ is my identity. Then Jesus lifted up his eyes and said, Father, I thank thee that thou hast heard me. The moment you accept Christ's identity, the stone is rolled away, and Christ in you, accepted, which goes to the Father, lifts up its eyes and says to the Father, thank you. I thank thee that thou hast heard me. These aren't words spoken by Jesus. This is the inner consciousness of Christ establishing communion with the Father automatically. And now there's a reciprocal flow. The stone is rolled away. You know your identity. Christ says, and I know that thou hearest me always. God always hears the Christ of you. But because of the people which stand by, I said it, that they may believe that thou hast sent me. And so outwardly Jesus is speaking, but inwardly Christ is merely relaying the words of the Father. You're in grace at this point because Christ in you is always in grace. And when he had thus spoken, he said with a loud voice, Lazarus, come forth. Now that loud voice, the word loud signifies not human, but infinite. This is the voice of spirit. Lazarus, come forth. The moment you have turned to the acceptance of self, the spirit within you says, Lazarus, come forth. There is a transformation. Lazarus is Christed. This is the second birth. And so it is said that we must have two mothers. First the human, and then the spirit. The second birth. Lazarus, come forth. Come forth into life. The Christing is the coming forth into life, into freedom, into immortality here and now. Remember, this man is going to walk out of the tomb back into the world because it is a now experience on this earth. This is an ascension into the distant, into the ether. He walks back into form for that reason, to show you it must be done now and can be done now on the earth. He that was dead came forth, bound hand and foot with grave clothes, his face bound with a napkin. The newborn still carries with him some of the conditioning of the past. The grave clothes represent the thoughts of yesterday. The mind still has its remnants. The face is covered with a napkin. He still can't see. The face represents the perceptive ability. The faculties still aren't completely Christed to the point where he can see the infinite, hear the infinite, live in the kingdom. This is still Bethany, not Jerusalem. But loose him, let him go. The newborn life comes, and with it comes the new freedom, and with that come the new divine gifts. This is the beginning of the life in spirit. For Lazarus, mortality is over. Spiritual life is lived in now. This is the experience of the rebirth that Jesus had taught from the very moment of his mission, beginning of water to wine, transformation. Here it is, Lazarus, reborn to the Spirit. Mary and Martha, one in consciousness, as Mary and Martha in you, are one in consciousness. Heart and head become the living act of divine will, moving as the expression of divine love. Loose the Christ within and let him go. So this is the place we come to. And when we come to this place, when Christ Jesus came to this place was Lazarus, it was the beginning of the triumphant entry. Now they would go with their palm leaves, entering Jerusalem. For his hour had now come. The world had been taught that there is a Christ within each of us, a slumbering God. Divinity is revealed where mortality seemed to be. This is the demonstration of it, witnessed by John. Somewhere in the world, the people saw that Lazarus was not dead, and nobody knew what had happened. It may not have been as dramatic as John saw it inside. It probably was nothing much. A man might have been sick and recovered. But if not for John, the world would never have this living gospel about the rebirth that takes place in everyone who comes to the Christ, gives it to drink within, wipes away the tears by reciprocating the love, accepting the love, and then living that love, making divine will the only active ingredient of our complete motivation. Loose him, let him go. Loose the Spirit of God in you, let it go. Let it do its will in you. It is said here that some of the Jews believed and some did not. Many of them came to Mary, and those who had seen the things which Jesus did, some believed, but some went their ways to the Pharisees and told them what things Jesus had done. That means that even after we come to a place where this is somewhat understood, part of the intellect turns one way, part of it turns another way. Part of it goes back to the old consciousness, part of it is uplifted. Sometimes part of it is even offended. It's probably a little too late today to draw conclusions from this, because basically the importance of the resurrection of Lazarus is not that it's reported in the Bible or that the world has walked by it. The only importance of it is, what can we learn from it? What have you learned from it all these years? And what are you learning from it today? And what would you learn from it within yourself? Some of you may be ambitious enough to even want to jot down what you think you've learned from the resurrection of Lazarus. I think it's important enough to make it a written assignment to yourself. I think you'd be very wise to write down to yourself what you have learned from the resurrection of Lazarus up to this moment. If you are further interested in having me look at it, I would be delighted. I would like to know what you have learned from the resurrection of Lazarus. And then I would like to discuss with you what you have learned in the hope that together we could reinforce that. So if you care to, and this is not mandatory, if you want to send to me what you believe you have learned from the resurrection of Lazarus, the fundamental points of it, please do. I'd be very pleased to receive that writing from you. No hurry, this week, next week, any time. But I can assure you that next week we will crystallize in this class what we can learn from the resurrection of Lazarus as a living procedure. Because even though we've heard it, putting it all together into a living principle of life is still not easy. For we still must come to the place where we see that Lazarus had learned not to live in a body image. That Christ standing there before the tomb was not in a body image. That Mary and Martha to Christ were not a body image. Are we at that level? Now, as you do this, you will discover something beautiful happening to you. You will discover the power of inner vision being formed. You will find that inner vision is opened as you begin to live with the inner vision of John about the resurrection of Lazarus. Our inner vision is forming now. Our inner receptivity to the saints and the sages, our capacity to become aware of the forms of light, our ability to walk to some degree in the invisible without strangeness. All of this comes as you begin to dwell in the inner vision of John. Your consciousness is changing out of materiality into spiritual consciousness. And that is the consciousness in which divine love operates, in which divine will animates, in which the real life activates the real form. Those of you who send me your letters, if you care to make a copy, do so. If you want to write the original and want it back, please put on it, send back to me. If it doesn't say send back to me, I'll just presume that I can make some marks on it. Because I'm really going to look into it. And then we're also going to work on resting in oneness, which is the chapter that we're up to in the realization of oneness. I and the Father are one, and that one is called the living Christ where you stand. It's coming together, it's opening us. Let's see if we can't go from Bethany now to Jerusalem. Thanks very much.